AFBK.
Good afternoon and welcome aboard. Happy Tuesday to you. John McGinnis with you. News 93.1 KFBK live everywhere on the IR radio app and your smart speaker. Hope you're having a great day. And boy, do we have things to talk about today. We're only going to scratch the surface and all the things going on. Are you tired of it yet? Are you tired of the apathy towards overt misconduct that nobody seems to pay attention to? Do you remember a time when you at least perceived an environment in which there was a kind of a balance? There were consequences for people doing bad things, and that discouraged others from doing bad things. And generally speaking, the rules seemed to be respected and people lived better lives because of it. Does that seem like something that you can recall as a reality at some point in your life? Well, it absolutely represents my former reality, but things are changing dramatically, and we're seeing more and more and more evidence of it every day. And I'm not necessarily talking about the uptick in homicides and rapes and robberies and all the serious crimes that take place. That's undeniable. It's true. It's happening in huge numbers. And it's, I think, a very, very easy phenomenon to explain. But let's look at how this all works out, because you've got some of the lower level offenses, the quality of life crimes that set the stage and actually set, I think, a standard of expectation that people will follow in terms of how they behave. The most recent example is at a Walgreens store in San Francisco, where a shoplifter filled a trash bag with Walgreens merchandise in front of several shoplifters and a security guard. This just happened yesterday. By the way, the shoplifter rode into the store on a bicycle without anyone stopping him, loads up his trash bag. It looks like a big, good-sized, hefty trash bag. Loads it up with merchandise and rides right past a couple of onlookers who are video recording it, one of whom is a uniformed security guard. The security guard kind of tries to swat the bag of merchandise, but the thief deflects it very, very ably and rides right past him and literally rides the bicycle right outside the store. To the chagrin of a man walking in, adjusting his mask as he does so. Of course, the thief is masked as well, which is perhaps a bit of the problem. We're going to get into some of the reactions on this in a bit, and I'll tell you that the masking absolutely has an impact on the challenges to enforcing the law if you wait to take action thereafter. But this happened to happen in the presence of Leanne Melendez, a local reporter for ABC 7's sister station KGO-TV, and she caught the brazen theft on video, which she later posted on Twitter. Just yesterday, and she posted it with a message. I'll quote from that message. It says, "This just happened at the Walgreens on Fell Street in San Francisco. Hashtag no consequences," she wrote. She tagged Walgreens and the city's district attorney, Chesa Bowden, in the post, which has been viewed more than 2 million times on Twitter. The 21-second clip shows a man on a bicycle wearing a blue face mask, jeans, and a dark blue jacket, filling a black garbage bag with products. A couple of people, including a security guard, film him with their cell phones and discuss whether or not to call 911. The shoplifter then swings the bag over the bike's handlebars, puts his head down. This is inside the store where there's pedestrians walking around, any number of people, potentially small children, elderly people, whatever the case may be, and this fool is riding a bicycle through the store, in the interior of the store. As I indicated earlier, the security guard makes an attempt to swat the bag of stolen goods away from him, but the shoplifter manages to push his way out the door and pedal away. Walgreens was not immediately available for comment. So Ms. Melendez, the reporter, says that's when he sort of ran into me with his bicycle. She, again, was shopping at the Hayes Valley Walgreens on Fell Street. And she said, and I quote, "It's hard for me as a journalist to say I won't be involved. I can't get involved. I have to be sort of neutral, but this is also my city," she told ABC. "I live in the city, and I see this constantly, not only Walgreens, but cars, and my garage has been broken into twice." She told ABC 7 that she has been seen three shoplifting sprees at different Walgreens locations in the Bay Area. "At what point do we say enough is enough?" That's her question. "We want our city back." I think that's a very legitimate question. Many of the almost 3,000 people commenting on the video agreed, citing this as the latest example of thefts and criminal activity that they've seen around the city of San Francisco. And by the way, San Francisco is among the cities that have seen this big spike in hate crimes this year. They've seen a spike in crime across the board. Several others suggested that the witnesses did the correct thing in letting the man go. And I quote from a post, "The security guard got it all on video and no store patron was injured in the process. Win-win," wrote one. "This was handled correctly." Well, let me inform this win-win writer. There's no justice to come from this. This guy is masked. Nobody knows who he is. You're never going to be able to identify him to a satisfactory standard to prosecute him for this theft. It's incredible to me that people are so obtuse as to not recognize the wrongheadedness of this. Another post, "We will never achieve world peace if you guys can't see that Walgreens will lose nothing from this." And that man probably resorted to this because he had no other choice. That was another post. Again, I think that's abject foolishness. It's insanity to see it that way. First of all, that incident, the theft of the merchandise that he took, negligible in the grand scheme of things in terms of Walgreens and how they can operate. But if you allow this to go unchecked, and the prevailing perception is you will not be held accountable for thefts at Walgreens stores or any other retail operation in San Francisco. And quite honestly, San Francisco is the epicenter of this, but it's happening throughout the state of California because the laws have been diluted throughout the entire state of California. This is not San Francisco municipal law. This is the California Penal Code that's been changed by the voters in the state of California, taking the teeth out of it in terms of consequences for theft, for repetitive thefts, for making a life of stealing from retail stores. You can go back and do it every single day of the year with virtually no consequences whatsoever. You can walk into a store with a contraption to help you facilitate the theft, clearly illustrating the fact that you intend to do so, making it a commercial burglary under the old law, a felony that could bring significant consequences. Now that's been reduced to a misdemeanor. There's no consequences to come from it. And Walgreens has been taking a hit. The retailer has closed 17 stores in San Francisco over the past 5 years. 17! That's according to San Francisco Chronicle. And Walgreens spends 35 times more on security guards at stores in the city compared to other U.S. locations. What's more, theft at these stores is 4 times higher than in other stores, per the Chronicle's reporting. 17 Walgreens over the last 5 years, almost every Gap retail outlet is gone. CVS stores are under assault. Those are the words of Asha Safai, a member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, that she shared with ABC News locally in San Francisco. Safai held a hearing on organized retail theft last month and has proposed that the district attorney and the police department coordinate to do more to stop the shoplifting sprees. Well, I think that's a great idea. She says it might even involve more aggressive effort when it comes to surveillance cameras because you see the same individual hitting multiple locations. You can begin to have deeper conversations about bringing multiple charges or aggregate charges against that individual and really start to break this up. Well, I like the way she's thinking, but regrettably, the voters of the state of California have made some changes in California law. There was a time when theft with a prior was a felony under 666 of the California Penal Code. If you are arrested and convicted of a theft, even a petty theft, and served 1 minute in custody for that theft, you would be subject to felony charges for the second go-around. That all went out the door. The voters, in their infinite wisdom, shot that down with Proposition 47 back in 2014. It no longer stands. You can literally go back to the same retail store every single day of the year, 365 days a year, steal $949 worth of merchandise, and have no compounding consequences for that. So this is absolutely foreseeable. I, among many others, warned the voters of the state of California, certainly this part of the state of California, as to the consequences if Prop 47 became law. And it has. And it's exactly what's taking place now. And as for those who think this was well handled and it's no big deal, Walgreens can roll with it. No, they're not going to roll with it. First of all, they've closed 17 stores. So they are suffering rather substantially. By the way, Walgreens, I got a statement from them. Walgreens still has 53 stores in San Francisco, which surprises me. Theft in Walgreens San Francisco stores is 4 times more the average of stores elsewhere in the country. And the chain spends 35 times more in security guards in San Francisco than it does elsewhere in the nation. That is according to Jason Cunningham, the regional vice president of pharmacy and retail. So they have, Walgreens is suffering because of it, but more importantly, they're not going to turn the lights on and open the doors to give money away. So you pay more for that toothbrush that you buy at Walgreens than you otherwise would because they're getting hit like this. But I really truly believe the consequences of turning a blind eye to this kind of behavior is far more than the theft that occurs at a given time. I don't know what was in this trash bag that the guy took out of the store on this occasion, but that is not the issue. That is not the sum total of the loss. It is what it does by way of invitation to others to behave in the same or similar manner. I have a quick story in this area. I'm not going to say what the company is, but it's a locally headquartered grocery outlet, a store. It's a pretty good-sized chain, has a big footprint throughout Northern California. And one of their personnel recently told somebody near and dear to me that they had seen a couple of occasions where a van pulled up or a truck and dropped off a significant number of young kids who went into the store and grabbed multiple shopping carts and headed right to the hard liquor aisle, filled their shopping carts with bottles of hard liquor, and walked out of the store. And the direction from management was, do not interfere in any way, shape, manner, or form under penalty of termination from employment. So you pay more for a head of lettuce at this store because of what they allow to occur there, because they're scared to death of the liability incurred when their personnel intervene and stop a theft from occurring. But there's another thought on that particular issue, and that is, what kind of liability may they incur when they are furnishing minors with alcohol? If you sell booze to a minor and that minor goes out and engages in a foreseeable, maybe a traffic collision, maybe some other aberrant behavior that compromises life or takes a life, there's liability to the purveyor of that booze. Well, if you're so idly standing by that you effectively give that merchandise away, I hope you encounter that same or incur that same liability. It's an absolute mess. It is a mess. We have, obviously, the laws have changed, and that's a big part of the problem. But I encourage people to find out, when you do business with a retailer, be it a grocery store or a department store, whatever the case may be, inquire as to what their policy is with regard to prosecution of shoplifters. If they don't take it seriously, if they don't care, and they're going to charge you more money to buy merchandise in that store, then guess what? You should probably think about shopping elsewhere. And I know it's extraordinarily difficult. And I hate to be critical of people who operate retail businesses because their life has gotten increasingly challenging in recent years. But this is a horrible, horrible way to do business and to allow this sort of thing to happen. The observer, the person who tweeted saying that this poor person was desperate. Why are they desperate? You got money being handed out by the government in extraordinary numbers. You have shelters throughout the city and county of San Francisco. You have places where people can get warm meals and a cot. You have everything you need. Toiletries, all they need, they can get. So that desperation doesn't wash. Get your heads in the right place, folks. This is insanity. Your thoughts, 800-834-1530. By the way, there's a poll question on this. The video is posted on my website, John McGinnis page at kpk.com. Check it out. I think you'll find it interesting, and I'd love to get your thoughts. 800-834-1530.
Local news, breaking news, traffic, weather, and the in-depth analysis you need from John McGinnis every afternoon.
3-1 KFBK.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you. News 93.1 KFPK live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app and your smart speaker. I got a lot of people want to get in on this, and I'm going to jump right into the calls. Let's check in with Mike in Amador County. Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation, sir, and thank you for holding on.
Good afternoon, Sheriff. It's an honor. Been a fan for a long time.
Thank you, sir. The pleasure is mine.
Hey, I see a natural progression here from the passage of Prop 47 and 57 yep. also, and you've seen it too. And we're at the point to where if you can't go to the authorities for protection, what's your next option?
Yeah, it's foreseeable. And vigilantism is coming. I believe it's true. And I look at the people in this particular video. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, Mike, but if you haven't, I encourage you to look at it. It really, truly illustrates a real problem because you have a guy walking into the store. He sees this fool riding out on a bicycle. And I think there was a time when the average person would have said, wait a minute, what are you doing here? Something's wrong with this picture. But now he's fearful, and people, I think in general, are fearful of liability consequences. But what have we created, and to what degree have we backed ourselves into a corner collectively where there's absolute foreseeability? And I just want to emphasize the fact that it's Walgreens does take a hit from this, but they're not going to absorb the whole hit. So anybody who shops there, and I don't blame them for this, anybody who shops there is victimized by this. And quite honestly, they're spending 35 times more on security loss prevention efforts in San Francisco stores than they do elsewhere. Well, having a uniformed security guard there and telling them not to engage, which is, I understand what the rule is, just be a visual deterrent. Well, that's money burnt. It's a complete and total fool's errand to spend money on that. It does no good. This particular security guard, with no disrespect intended, does not have a command presence at all and looks as though they'd run if you stomped your foot. So it's your I think your observations, your analysis is absolutely accurate, Mike, and I share your concerns with, I think, very good reasons. Appreciate the call from Amador County. Let's check in with Lee up in beautiful Chico. Lee, good afternoon. Oop, we lost Lee. Let's check in with Kevin in Sacramento. Kevin, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation. Thanks for holding on.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Sheriff. Years ago at Home Depot in Sacramento, I remember we had sheriffs posted at the exit doors. Yep. And if the sheriff said, show your receipt, you showed your receipt, and there was really no funny business going out that door. I mean, I could see people kind of looking around sometimes, but once they realized the sheriffs were posted where they were posted, yep. And they were asking randomly, maybe not everybody, but if you went by that sheriff and you didn't have a receipt, you weren't going to leave with that product.
Yeah, that is a program that still exists, and retailers can, they have to pay for it, obviously. It's called the off-duty program. It's a little bit misleading because it's actually enhanced patrol presence, but they pay through the county of Sacramento to have a uniformed officer there, and depending upon the needs, it may also incur the cost of a patrol car. And yeah, then you do have an effective, not only deterrent, I believe, but you have somebody who is has the wherewithal, the competence, and the resources to effectuate an arrest. And that's what has to happen, I believe. Without that course of action taking place, I think it's absolutely predictable this will continue to get worse. And who's going to want to invest in retail businesses? What happens to the people who make their living in that fashion? Not only the shelf stalkers, the clerks, the janitorial staff, but the managers and CEOs. It's a big, big hit to retail. Appreciate the call very much, Kevin.
Digging deep behind the stories. In
Point One, KFBK.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you. News 93.1 KFBK live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app and your smart speaker. Talking about crime, runaway crime, violence out of control in most of the major urban centers across the country and a lot of rural communities, frankly, for that matter. So it is an increasing issue of concern. And, of course, we have different systems of justice. We have state law in California, as all 50 states have. But we also have federal law, and very, very happy to have a person who has committed his life to the effort of enforcing the law and keeping communities safe. The special agent in charge of the Sacramento Field Office of the FBI, Sean Reagan, is with us. Sean, great to have you this afternoon. Thanks for taking time out to be with us.
Yeah, hi, Sheriff. Great to be with you and your listeners. I really appreciate it.
Terrific. And we got people fired up because we're very concerned about the extent to which we've lost control in California. And I can tell you from, we've talked about this in the past, but from my time in law enforcement, enforcing state law in California, we were kind of territorial. We wanted to hang on to our cases, and we wanted to see them prosecuted through the state system. But the voters in the state have made some changes in recent years, and I certainly don't want to ask you to comment on that, but it has created some level of inequity where the consequences for state prosecutions are nothing close to what they once were. And in fact, there's a plan underway now, a loose plan, to discharge some 76,000 inmates from the state prison system. So in terms of resources that the federal agencies can bring to bear, I know you've got some task forces where you work with law enforcement agencies, local law enforcement agencies in the state. What do you have? What are you seeing out of those task forces, and what kind of benefits do you have from prosecuting those cases federally?
Sure. Thanks for asking that question. And it's really important for the listeners to understand that the FBI And in addition to all the other federal law enforcement agencies, we work with our local and state counterparts literally every day. And so, as you mentioned, we're working in formalized task forces with them, but we're also ad hoc working together on various crimes and incidents and matters that pop up at a moment's notice. And so when we are working together, which again is always, we discuss in terms of if we arrest somebody, if we investigate a particular crime, a particular incident, does it make sense to try to take it for prosecution at the local or state level, or does it make sense to take it at the federal level? And those discussions are had literally day in and day out, not only amongst the law enforcement officers involved, but the DAs and then the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Right. So, I know it goes beyond the simply the sentencing involved, but sometimes the standard of proof required and what's necessary to actually garner a conviction, the likelihood of getting a conviction that would change, perhaps change the behavior of the person involved. I used to really appreciate cases where you had somebody who was deeply entrenched in gang activity around here, generations of gang involvement. And we would arrest them for crimes involving the use of a firearm, and we'd share with our federal counterparts and wind up having them prosecuted in the federal system. And they sometimes serve their sentence in New Jersey or someplace far, far away, 3,000 miles away. And you kind of break up that dynamic of gang activity, which is extraordinarily dangerous to the community. So I'm sure that's still taking place, is it not?
It is. And thank you for bringing up gangs, because that is one of our top priorities, investigating gangs, criminal enterprises, organized crime, but really with the goal of making the community a safer place and reducing violent crime. And so that's our, we call it a nexus into oftentimes what is traditionally considered local or state jurisdiction. But if there's gangs, criminal enterprises involved, and their criminal activity somehow crosses state lines, so to speak, that gives the federal government a jurisdiction in there. And so we work, like you had mentioned before, on task forces. And so we have what's called Safe Streets Task Forces. And those task forces are state, local, federal officers all working together specifically to take on the gang problem and the violent crime that ensues from that.
So I think it's clear to see that the benefits of the federal prosecution go far beyond the mere calculation of time to be served, but where they serve that time and the consequences that can be brought to bear from the federal perspective can really truly be a game changer in terms of kind of breaking the cycle that can get a negative grip on a community. So I think that's very much appreciated. It's no secret that the FBI has been in the headlines of late, and there's all sorts of just as when you have human beings, you're going to have some level of crisis and challenges along the way. But I sense from you that your commitment is to kind of recognize and observe the concept of Lady Justice being blindfolded, and that politics, ideology, other factors are not so much concern to you. You want justice. Is that how you see your charge as your in your capacity as special agent in charge?
Yeah, justice is of the utmost importance. And so, you know, our mission in the FBI is to protect the American people and uphold the Constitution. And you can't do one without the other and be right. successful. You have to uphold the Constitution. You have to defend the Constitution. And you also have to protect the American people at the same time. And so, yeah, it is blind. And I will tell you, I've been in the FBI for 25 years, and I was in local law enforcement here in California for over 5 years before that, and there are just some incredibly dedicated professionals in the law enforcement community, and they're doing their work every single day to keep the community safe, and they're not worried about ideology, they're not worried about the politics, they're looking to make sure that the communities are safe by taking the bad folks that are breaking the law infringing on our national security interests, so to speak, sure. and getting them off the streets and so that the community can be safer. And so that's what they're focused on every single day.
Yeah, I think it's good for the public to be kind of made aware of the fact that the people that are in the trenches actually doing the work, that are executing warrants and looking for evidence of criminal conduct and engaged in making first observation-based arrests and bringing justice to a situation or equation where it's compromised, there's no element of political or ideological influence at all that I see. It's simply trying to achieve the stated goals of protecting the public, and so I think it's refreshing for the public to get some clarity on that message. Got a lot of questions I want to ask you, but I want to talk to you about how you commit your resources in terms of priorities. I know bank robberies, to some degree, have been a priority at different times. I sense there's a little bit less of that now, and there's more. They're much more challenging, complex situations. I want to talk about cybersecurity and other threats that exist. So a lot more conversation coming up with Sean Regan from the FBI.
Analyzing the news of the day from a Sacramento, California perspective. John McGinnis, each afternoon, 3 to
News 93.1 KFBK.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you. News 93.1 KFBK live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app and your smart speaker. Sean Regan is a special agent in charge of the FBI, and he is here this afternoon sharing his perspective and thoughts on things, kind of giving you an update. I think it's important for people to know that there is still a passionate desire and a drive within people in law enforcement to hold the crooks accountable, to bring justice to victims who have been adversely impacted by criminal acts, and perhaps most importantly, to prevent additional crimes from taking place. And one of the things that catches my attention, you know, if you go home and your house is intact, and while you were out, you were not accosted, you were not assaulted or robbed or otherwise victimized, and your house, the contents are still in order, you know you haven't been a victim of a crime. But this cybercrime, that is a whole new area of criminal conduct, and I know it's been with us for a while, but it's growing in terms of consequences, and you see the enormous institutions they're able to take down. So the potential for an ordinary person, I think having the experience of going to the bank and finding out that their nest egg that they thought was all there has been breached and is compromised, that's got to take some of your time, energy, and effort these days, does it not?
Oh, it most certainly does. Cybercrime is pervasive through everything that we do. So whether we're looking at organized crime, we're looking at gangs, we're looking at counterintelligence, terrorism, frauds, white-collar crime, right? I mean, cybercrime is front and center in all of that because people use the internet as a means to commit their crimes, as a means to communicate, and as a means to victimize people. And so it's... It's a big problem, and it's not only individuals, as you mentioned, that may be victims if they get defrauded or their bank accounts get impacted through some sort of a breach, but nations are vulnerable, critical infrastructure is vulnerable, companies, private sector companies, vulnerable. I mean, we've seen the ransomware attacks of late, and that's just a drop in the bucket, so to speak, of what's really going on out there in the cyber world.
So thinking back in your 25 years with the FBI and 5 years before that in local law enforcement, what are the biggest changes you see in terms of cybercrime was not on your mind, I'm sure, when you started? It was a completely different set of circumstances. I don't know what your priorities were then versus now, but how have things changed just kind of looking back over the years, and what do you anticipate going forward?
Well, yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Much like you, we didn't even have cell phones when I started, right? I mean, and you had to go to the payphone and make calls in. So a lot has changed over the years. But the use of the computer, the internet, social media, just doing everyday life in terms of banking and communicating, your insurance, everything is online now. And so that's a significant vulnerability. However, there's things that people can do to fortify their defenses, so to speak, in the cyber world, and they should do that, and they should be very conscientious about protecting themselves. And it's not difficult, but you have to be on it, and you have to review it on a regular basis. The other thing that I would say is a change. When I say recently, you know, the last 10 years is the dark web and criminals taking over the dark web and using it as a way to both sell illicit goods and services, but to communicate with one another as well in conspiring to commit various crimes or terrorism acts.
Even, you know, all of the electronically based communications that take place as a significant component of these crimes, establishing venue for the purposes of jurisdiction is a difficult thing to do. I mean, where are these people when they're engaged in their criminal activity? That's a big part of what you have to establish fairly on and early on in the course of the investigation. So what kinds of things can people do? Just the basic rudimentary course of conduct that people can take to minimize the likelihood that they get a big surprise.
Well, it's things that we tell our folks every day, even internal to the FBI, is, you know, if you see a strange email with a link to it, or a text with a link to it, and you don't recognize who it's from, or you're not confident that it's actually coming from that particular person or entity, don't click on it, right? Don't access it, because it could then insert malware into your systems, and then that malware can spread to other systems and other individuals and other companies and entities. So, I mean, simple things like that. Passwords and using strong passwords to protect your accounts. I mean, those are all things that we all know, we all hear about,
right?
But not everybody does it.
And I suppose there's a bit of a caution for people that the FBI, the U.S. Attorney, DEA, the IRS will not initiate. They're not going to send you a text message or an email telling you to surrender your assets and give your password to accounts to pay an outstanding debt. Right? That is not how that takes place.
That is not how that takes place. That is correct. And if you get any of those types of calls or emails, do not respond to them. And if you're concerned, if you think it is legitimate, which most likely it is not, then do your own research into how to contact that particular agency directly, and you call them on their public-facing information so that you're sure that you're getting to the particular agency. And then when you do, and you ask them, hey, did you call me or did you send me this email, they're going to tell you they did not.
Yeah, I know the IRS would like to have everybody's money, but they do take a different path to get there. And I know they prey on the elderly when they do this, because people for whom electronic communication is relatively new, they don't have a lot of savvy in terms of navigating those waters, and they get a message from somebody who purports to be a member of the FBI, the IRS, some other federal agency, or a local law enforcement agency for that matter, saying that you've done something wrong and therefore you have to pay up and we need your account numbers to make this happen. That's not legitimate. And by the way, if ever there was an occasion where somebody legitimately took that course of action, which I think is safe to say won't happen, but call the agency that they ostensibly claim to be representing and inquire of them and make sure that you don't give anything up that would compromise everything you've worked so hard to acquire.
Yes, you're right. Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sean Reagan, appreciate your time very, very much, sir. We'll have you back again. Time always flies fast when we have interesting people here, so I'll have to get back again to get caught up on other things going on with the FBI.
I'll look forward to it. Thank you.
Right. Thanks very much. Hey, that's it for me, as you can tell by the sound of music, but stick around. You've got the lovely and talented Kitty O'Neill coming up next. She's got the afternoon news. I'll see you back here tomorrow. Have a great one.
Building a better Sacramento. News 93.1 KFBK. News Radio. An iHeartRadio station. Also heard on 1530 AM. And available everywhere on our iHeartRadio app. Number one for music, radio, and podcast.